back to Hong Kong. Good morning again, Hamish McDonald.
A very good morning to you, Geraldine. Fascinating conversation that was. As we've been reporting, obviously, China will pull out all stops today to celebrate this anniversary. But what does today's anniversary mean for Hong Kong? Shortly, we'll be joined by a live panel. But first, I've been talking to author and China expert Louisa Lim.
The leaders in Beijing do not understand Hong Kong. They don't really have the capacity to deal with a population like this. The tools that they have used in mainland China, you know, are those tools of brute force and intimidation. It's really not working here. And I think it also shows that this idea of one country, two systems, it hasn't worked. And no one knows, you know, what comes next. What is happening in Hong Kong is kind of like a precursor for what could happen in other places as well. As we have seen China's influence increase across the world, as we've seen Chinese companies become more economically powerful, and China try and spread its set of values across the world. Here in Hong Kong, we're seeing how those set of values colliding with sort of Western universal values. And what we're also seeing is the way in which Beijing is using its economic might to bring even multinational companies in line. And so you see companies like Cathay Pacific, where they've fired all these people for expressing opinions on social media about the protests. And as more and more companies across the world are being bought up by Chinese interests, and as we're seeing this sort of Chinese campaign of disinformation about the Hong Kong protests in particular, we're seeing how that plays out in places like Australia. You can see that Hong Kong's problems are not actually limited to Hong Kong, that there's this ripple effect which is being felt across the world. So I think people in Australia should watch Hong Kong really closely, because, you know, Australia's economy is so dependent on China's, that there are all these linkages and all these potential levers that China can use as well because of those economic ties.
That's Louisa Lim speaking there. More protests are planned in Hong Kong today, countering the very image that China is so clearly trying to project. Joining me now to discuss this clash of ideologies is Wilson Leong. He's a lawyer and founder of the Progressive Lawyers Group here in Hong Kong. And from Beijing this morning, I'm joined by Einar Tangen. He's a China political analyst and an advisor to the Chinese government on economics and development. To both of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, let me start with you. This is so obviously an important moment for Beijing. But as we heard in that conversation with Louisa Lim, she said that China just does not have the capacity to deal with a population like this, the population in Hong Kong. How do you view that?
Well, I think there's some legitimacy to that from this perspective, that China did not pay enough attention to the plight of these young people. I see it mostly as an economic situation, in the sense that most of these people, they have no real hope going into the future. They can't afford a home. Their wages are depressed, despite being by GDP per capita, the eighth largest economy in the world. So it is very difficult for them. But I think they probably aiming at the wrong target. It's the top 100 families who have become unbelievably wealthy over this period of time, some dealing with China, some dealing with the West, who have basically kept the housing supply fairly limited. I mean, they actually moved to oust a leader in the 90s who said, look, they need to establish a Singaporean-style system to guarantee, you know, basic economic conditions for people. So what you see here is a lot of rage going forward. I don't think China was prepared for that. But I think they now understand that the changes eventually have to come to make sure that these people do have a future.
Wilson Leung, is that right, that the people on the streets of Hong Kong have the wrong target and that actually Beijing is not really doing anything wrong as far as rights and values are concerned?
From my perspective, I think it's a bit more complicated than that. A lot of people on the streets are demanding political and civil rights. Obviously, there's an economic aspect to it. But from my perspective, people of Hong Kong would not be satisfied merely with a Singapore-style economy, within the very paternalistic economy where the government takes care of everything, but you don't really have much of a say. I think that where people from of Hong Kong come from, the background they have is a lot different from that. So my estimation is that that itself wouldn't be enough to satisfy the protests and the people behind it.
Aina, is there any acknowledgement in Beijing of this failure to live up to the promise that was made to the people of Hong Kong? Because that's, if you're reporting on the streets here, that's what you hear time and time again. We were promised one thing, we've been given something else.
Well, yes, that's a narrative that you hear a lot. I don't know what the substance of it is. There's been concern about this extradition treaty. Quite frankly, it's a little bit strange that Hong Kong, which is part of the One China, would not have an extradition treaty, nor with Macau or Taiwan. They have extradition treaties with the U.S. So that was a catalyst. But as I keep saying, there's this narrative that goes around that somehow Hong Kong has been mistreated. As I said, it's not as a country. It's not a country, but it's not as a unit, a government. I mean, I don't understand exactly what is happening in Hong Kong that makes people go to the streets other than this kind of underlying economic things. Now, I understand what Wilson says. That's a complex situation. I would agree. But the whole point is that, where is Hong Kong going? I mean, right now, the hotels, the restaurants, the shops are under dire threat. There's the occupancy rates of the hotel are just astoundingly low. These protests are ruining the economy. And given that Hong Kong cannot attach a motor to the island or the islands and move themselves to, Europe or the United States, they have to deal with China. And the way they're going about it is a bit petulant at best.
Yeah, I think to go back on the point about whether the focus is really on economics, I think if we just focus on that, it's very difficult to explain a lot of things. For example, it's very difficult to explain why these protests have a very broad mobilization. We see it across the society. We see doctors, lawyers, engineers, civil servants all coming out to rally. So if it's only the kids, then one may say, okay, well, the kids have no future. But a lot of the people who are on the streets, but also the people who are behind them, are actually the very middle class, who aren't especially worried about their future. So that's difficult to explain if one only focuses on economics. But it's also difficult to explain the pattern of these big-scale protests, which have been happening in the past two decades. We have the 2003 protests over national security. We have the protests in 2012 over patriotic education, 2013 over a television station, 2014 over electoral reform package, and then 2019 over extradition bill. So it's extremely consistent, a pattern of big protests bubbling up every once in a while. And to my view, that can only be explained that there's some deficiency in the expectation vis-a-vis the political system and not just the economic benefits that are accruing to the people.
I'm talking to Wilson Leung, a lawyer and founder of the Progressive Lawyers Group in Hong Kong, and in Beijing. We're talking to Aina Tangen, who is an advisor to the Chinese government. Aina, I want to put to you one of the comments made by Louisa Lim in that interview just before we joined you. She said that the world should be watching Hong Kong because this is a precursor for what could happen in other places as well as China becomes more powerful and starts to flex its muscle. How do you respond to that sort of assertion?
Well, I'd love to know exactly what is meant by that. I don't see the Chinese government setting up offices of the Communist Party and other countries and advocating that people or governments start adopting their values. So I think it's a kind of slippery slope to start saying, oh, yes, the red's under the bed. Let's begin mass hysteria. China has but there a different
is,
system.
Sorry to interrupt you, but there is clearly a fear of that kind of thing through things like the United Workers Front. That's a conversation that's very much alive in Australia, where there is a question about the way in which China is trying to influence Australia, both through our politics and on university campuses, for example. The example given by Louisa Lim was Cathay Pacific and the fact that people had been sacked at Cathay Pacific after expressing political views. I mean, this is a live debate that you must be aware of.
Of course. I mean, people have... No one is saying that the people of Hong Kong are satisfied. The question is, what is it that they want and is it possible? The fact is that they are part of China. China is not going to give up Hong Kong. They can ruin their economy, but I don't know if that's necessarily going to do anything. I mean, at this point, if people really feel that dissatisfied, they have the choice to immigrate out if they can find a place that will accept them, or to try to deal with this matter in an adult fashion, to try to figure out exactly what Hong Kong's future is. But the idea that there's going to be an independent, democratic Hong Kong, I mean, you must admit, Hamish, that is not going to work. It's not within the realm of possibility.
Wilson Leong, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I do agree with what Louise has said, which is that we see increasingly the Communist Party using what has been called sharp power. So there's not military force, but it's using all different means to bring pressure on various bodies outside its own borders. And we see that in Hong Kong, it's been become a prime testing ground for that. So, for example, we've seen dozens of workers being fired just for supporting the legal peaceful protests. We've seen that at Cathay Pacific, BNP Paribas, different places. And we've seen it further back in universities and different institutions in Hong Kong over the past few years. So that's really a testing ground for what you can see, how China uses things that are not military power, not legal means, but various means of pressure. And now we've seen that expanding somewhat beyond its own borders. Obviously, we've seen that in Taiwan, where there's concerns about the influence of elections, but also in places like Australia and Canada, where are, for example, in Australia, there's a conversation about possible influences on MPs. And the same thing has been happening in Canada. So I do agree with Louise's assessment that Hong Kong is the place to watch, and it will have implications for other places and democracies around the world.
Ina, what is the image that China today will be trying to project with this enormous military display? 15,000 soldiers marching, as I understand it, some pretty flash new military hardware. What is Beijing trying to say to the world?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily all about the world. You have to have to remember that the Chinese are very proud of what they've achieved over this period. I mean, they look at poverty reduction, the safety that you can walk around on the streets without being fear of being mugged or something like this. They look at the economic opportunities. Also, having survived 70 years to become a major power. I mean, if you go back 40 years ago, I mean, they didn't have banks or insurance companies. They didn't have the basic tools of a capitalist economy. Now they're probably one of the most capitalist systems out there. Not on a larger level. The larger situation is set by the government, but on the lower level, in terms of competition, very tough, and it's proving effective. So this is more about, national pride than anything else. I mean, like all of these events, they're trying to pull people together.
And how will they view anything that happens in Hong Kong today? Obviously, there's an expectation that things may turn pretty nasty. To what extent will that be an embarrassment for the leaders in Beijing?
Well, they certainly don't like it, but it's a situation where they have been adhering to the one country, two systems, and basically allowing Hong Kong to handle it. But, you know, once again, I've said many times that there's going to be a turning point when somebody's, you know, when there starts to be bodies on the ground, whether it's police or protesters. This situation is getting out of hand. I mean, the protests that you see are not about peaceful means. Those are fine. They're subject to the law. But the people throwing Molotov cocktails and burning things and attacking the police with bricks, destroying public property, that I don't think that's part of any kind of civilized discourse. That is really just, in essence, juvenile. And unfortunately, will lead to tragedy.
That is correct, isn't it, Wilson? That there is an escalation, that in part that is the responsibility of the ordinary folk of Hong Kong who are taking to the streets. The violence can't all be put on the shoulders of the authorities.
Yeah, of course, it's very easy to condemn violence, and Carrie Lam has been doing that quite consistently for the past 3 months. But I think it doesn't actually help solve anything. She can come out 1,000 times and it won't actually solve the protests that are going on. What is really important is to understand the cause of the violence. And of course, it is only a minority. When you go out on the street, the vast majority are the peaceful protesters. But it's important to understand the cause of the violence, such as it is. One has to remember that just as as close back as 1st of July, breaking windows of LegCo was considered very serious violence. So one has to see the pattern and how it has escalated. And to my mind, a lot of it has been due to the police's actions, both their actions towards the protesters, but also their inaction towards the sort of pro-Beijing gang attacks on the other side.
Do you acknowledge, though, that Hong Kongers are effectively just testing Beijing's patience, that at some point that patience will stop and there may be a crackdown, because as has been pointed out, that it's really only one direction ultimately that this is all going to go, and you know that all the destination for Hong Kong is to be fully consumed as part of China one day, and that there is no obligation longer term for that it even be two systems.
I think the immediate goal is really to have the two systems. Right now, in a lot of people's minds, it's as bad as one system or as one and a half system. So they might as well try their best in order to preserve the two systems as promised in the Joint Declaration, as promised in the Basic Law, for as long as possible. And that's why the people are out there on the streets every week fighting for the rights.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on the program this morning. Wilson Leung and Einar Tangen in Beijing. Thank you very much indeed.
Great. Thanks very much.
And Geraldine, it's been an extraordinary experience being here for all of this, and I'm looking forward to seeing those parades in Beijing today, and we'll obviously keep across whatever happens here on the ground. But I know you've got a lot of news to handle there in Australia as well.
Yes, thank you, Hamish. And it's just worth, you know, as a quick sort of rider to this, the white paper on China's view of itself that came out is really worth people looking at. And this is what the Communist Party says. Due to China's vast territory and complicated national conditions, the governance of China is uniquely difficult without centralised, unified and firm leadership. China would have tended towards division and disintegration and caused widespread chaos beyond its own borders. So that's what it sees itself doing, which I just think gives extra context. Thank you so much, Hamish.
Absolutely.
Terrific coverage from Hong Kong.